going. All right.
Yes, ma'am. Boom.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White, your host of Keeping It Real on Purpose. And this is the show where you meet real people doing real things in real time, all on purpose. And today we're so excited to have on the show our Corby Mitlied. Welcome to the show. Mitlied.
Everybody gets it wrong the first time, Ed. Don't worry about it.
Mitlied. And she is an author of the book Clean Out Your Life Closet. So welcome.
It's great to be here.
Great, wonderful. So how do you show up in the world, Corby?
I walk into a room 3 feet before I walk into a room. I'm one of those. As far as I'm concerned, I can't wait to meet someone new. I am interested in who they are, not so much me. I take my work very seriously, me not so much, which is where that book came from. I keep telling people, I'm not special. You can do what I do. And the book should come.
Okay, all right. So tell us the story behind Clean Out Your Life Closet.
Believe it or not, I have to say, well, it started out when I was a child because we all, I will give $50 to the first person who says, I've never read a self-help book. I remember my first one in 1968 when I was a teenager. And the first paragraph was, Judy has a groovy wardrobe. Like I said, 60s. Her makeup is fab and her hair is far out. But nobody likes Judy because Judy's fat. Right there in one paragraph, hundreds of thousands of teenage girls were told, you are worthless unless you look the way we tell you. And self-help books have damaged people for years. So I decided I was going to write one that didn't.
Right.
You write it with me.
Right.
I don't tell you what. I'm going to say, do yoga every morning and avoid food with leptin, like one other book says. And you are a single mom with two kids in Milwaukee and a job, you're not going to do that. So
you're right.
Here's some of the dumb things I did. Maybe here's a client story. Here's some things to think about. But then you've got the adventure pages where you have to answer those questions based on your own life. You can't turn to page 82 to find the right answer because it's all in here.
Right. Yeah. I like that. I like that. I can't remember the first self-help book, but I know when I was pondering writing my story about my childhood sexual abuse, I went to a meeting and it was in Philadelphia, and I never will forget listening to their stories. I was like, this is triggering everyone over and over again. I was like, I don't want to ever write a book that triggers or hurts anybody. And so when I wrote my book, it was totally opposite. And it was totally like, you know, talking about me and what I did and what you can do, you know, maybe try this, maybe try that, but we're not the same. And the end result is that we're all able to get out. We're all able to recover. We're all able to be amazing, you know, extraordinary. So I get what you're saying about that. I'm thinking about other self-help books. Yeah. I'm thinking about that. That's right. So, of course, I have some things turned down because you gave a great summary of your book. So I'm going to get into the questions I have. Like I turned.
Oh, yummy! Down. Go right ahead.
So I always talk about purpose, and you're talking about it. The first thing on page 33, getting clear on your purpose. Share with my audience what that is.
Your purpose is your sentence of passion. That's when you go skidding into heaven on bald tires and fumes in the tank, and God hands you a cup of coffee and says, so? And you go, I did this, isn't it cool? Now, my sentence of passion is cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly.
Yeah.
When I can take you from point A to point B and you thought you couldn't make it, I am living my bliss. But I've done it as an actress, an author, an inspirational speaker, a video producer, a legal assistant, and a writer, and a psychic. It's not the job. So when people come to me and say, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life, and a lot of women do that, age 50 and up, We look and help them find their sentence of passion, because then that focuses that clarity telescope of yours, and you know exactly where you want to go.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. I like that. Yeah, and it happens. And I've, you know, I know you have clients as well, 50 and up. It's like we've lived the roles of everything or everyone else or the sentences that everyone has pronounced on us, but we don't live the one that we're focused on. That's really good stuff. Like it. Okay, so page 53, getting clear in your relationships. I love this because X questions, it's like you said on the top, it's like an adventure pages. So the X questions, getting clear in your relationships. Can you share what made you put this like this?
Because as a psychic medium, 95% of the questions are, does Bruce love me? Please, you've got to learn how to do this. And my husband and I, we were not each other's first rodeo. We got married in our late 40s. And 18 months after we got married, I got my third bout of breast cancer. And they took me from a Dolly Parton figure to a fat fire plug with permanent side effects and pretty well damaged internally. It was not the marriage we thought we were going to have. So we had to truly work on learning to communicate with each other, which is where my 9 tips in that chapter come from. What we have learned.
Okay. That's good. That's good. And I like how you ask the questions afterwards, and so that we as the reader can depict what we, kind of what we want or what we envision a relationship to be like.
Yes.
I'm always talking about, surrounding yourself with good people, but you said here, about surrounding yourself with that has ceased to matter. Can we talk about what ceases to matter? What does that mean, ceases to matter?
There are going to be people around you who don't love you. There are going to be people around you who think their aura don't stink and you should be like them. Which is why I give my clients my 2 magic phrases. Thank you for sharing. You may think that if you wish, then you go do what the hell you need to do.
Yeah.
When you know yourself, you know your rules, and you know what truly makes a good relationship, you're not going to fall into their pity party traps. You're just not. You may have compassion for them, but you don't have to wallow in the mud with them.
Good. That's good stuff. I like it. I love this. So now I'm at carry experiences, not things. This is so good. Tell my audience about this. Carry experiences, not things.
All right. Ooh,
good.
There are people who collect stuff. Disney pins, depression glass, everything Star Wars. And they also have to have the new best most. So they may have bought a TV a year ago, but if Black Friday, there's an even better one, they just get rid of the other TV and buy the new big one. But they never really savor anything.
Right.
Then there are the, I call it the Rolodex people, and I have to change that if I ever revise the books, because Gen Z doesn't know what the hell a Rolodex is. But these are people who collect people. Think about the politicians. They're always shaking hands, but they're looking at the next person. So they may collect you, but they don't know you. Right. Then there's the been there, done that people. These are the deadheads that went to every concert. These are the people that have to be the first ones to try a new restaurant. These are the ones that have to go to whatever is, you know, the big Broadway show, Hadestown, Hamilton, whatever. But then there are the connection people, the experience people. The example I use is, let's say you decide you're going to work Thanksgiving at a dinner for the homeless, the unhoused, as you call it. Then you experience the delight of preparing the food. You feel the warmth of reaching out to your fellow human being. When you pass that plate of food, you look them in the eye and it's I am you. It is true compassion. You're not going to take home a ribbon. You may not know a whole bunch of people after that. And it doesn't matter if you were there or not in terms of I was the first one, but you have connected with the world in important ways that are gifts to your soul. That's why I experience things.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. So why is perfect not what we think it is?
Because it drives us into the ground. The example that I use, I loved the Broadway show 1776, and it has a scene showing Thomas Jefferson writing the Declaration of Independence, and he scribbles a page and he looks at it and he throws it away. Scribbles two sentences, looks at the page, throws it away. Looks at a blank piece of paper, throws it away. He has to get it so perfect, it never gets done.
Yeah.
And so perfect can be whatever is happening. And I use the experience in the book, I believe, of the fact that normally my birthday was a great big thing and I was sick that time. So, okay. So we didn't go out to dinner. And what was perfect about it? I found reasons to be okay with what was going on. I had a chance to breathe and relax. I had a chance to decide what was important in the moment. Yeah. I had a chance to put off that fancy dinner until I was well enough to enjoy it. And I rested and I was in the present moment and it was perfect. I wasn't a whiny butt at God going, "But it's my birthday and you're supposed to make it all good." Because God just looks at you and says, "Honey, take a chill."
Absolutely. So is stress good or bad?
Depends on the situation. Stress can be both. Good stress are things like when you get excited, you're about to go on stage. Good stress is final interview for the job you want. Good stress is you're in the starting block for a race. Bad stress is always saying yes when you should say no. Double thinking everything to make sure you did the right decision. It's beating yourself up for not being perfect. Those are things that are bad stress and they hurt you.
Yeah.
And the two kinds of stress I talk about are shot across the bow and mission creep. Shot across the bow is when God hits you upside the head with a clue brick so hard, it's like, yeah, I got it. The example I use is wolfing down something with so much fat and sugar in it that I should have known better. Heart palpitations, blood sugar went up. Well, that was God saying, see that thing? Don't do that again. So, got it. Mission creep is, it's a military expression where little private Yutz is supposed to do one thing and all the people put more things on top of him, but give him no more time and no more equipment. So he explodes. So mission creep, the example I use is there's a woman who loved to knit. And so she decided to make some baby clothes for a friend. And someone saw the baby clothes and said, could you knit some for my store? And then someone else said, could you knit some for our NPR fundraiser? And could you use the yarn and the directions from our sponsors? And she never said no, to the point where she was so overwhelmed that when she put away her knitting again and never went back to it. Oh, no is a fabulous idea. It is.
Oh, yes. I always say no with a period is a statement. No explanation needed. No explanation needed at all. I don't, you know, and I had to learn that because I would always put no and then put a comma and start explaining. And that didn't make it any better because it made me feel more guilty. You know, and I'm like, oh my goodness. And then finally I just said no with a period. And they'd be like, you know, they'd be waiting for some more to come. It is what it is.
You know how we, you know,
it makes more work for me.
Yes. You know how we're always doing our affirmations in the morning in the mirror. I'm wonderful.
Yeah.
I can have a great day. I want you to spend, all of you who can't say no, spend 5 minutes in the morning practicing no, 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 no. And just, you know, whatever you want to say. But I want you to get used to saying the no and then zip it. Honestly.
Yeah, zip it. I used to take my tongue and put it between my teeth and hold it until the whole situation's over.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So I wouldn't say anymore. So yeah, it no is important to say, because you lose yourself. You all the stuff piles on you, like you just described, and you lose yourself, and then you're not interested in nothing, you know, or not even yourself, you know, not even interested in that. So tell the audience what the donkey and the hole in the ground are in this, in clean out your life closet.
Oh, that's an old story. There was a farmer who had an old donkey, and he thought the donkey was pretty useless because it couldn't work anymore. So one day the donkey fell in a hole, and the farmer said, great, I'll just bury it and I'll never have to see it again. And he and a bunch of his workers started filling in the hole, pouring dirt on top of the donkey, who screamed and screamed and screamed, and then it stopped. And the farmer thought, okay, great. And they were starting to finish it, and then all of a sudden up comes the donkey out of the hole, because the donkey had used all the dirt as stepping stones. So what that is you can have stumbling blocks or stepping stones. You can see a situation and find ways to walk yourself out of it. It does not have to be perfect. It doesn't have to make sense to everybody else. But if you get yourself out of that hole, if you leave it behind, it's perfect.
That's beautiful. Great story. I love it. What's on the horizon for the beautiful Corby? What's on the horizon?
Oh, well, I'm working. You know, there's always another book. Life Closet was my first. There was The Psychic Yellow Brick Road, and then you've got The Magic Who Needs a Genie. The next one I'm working on with a very dear friend of mine that I consider the best astrologer in the U.S. Her name is Pat Dumas. And we're writing a book on community as the world changes. Because those of us who think positively, you, me, others who just don't want to buy into the doom and gloom, we have to be ready to step up even if the world looks dark. And this is how to do it. So we think it's a very important book. Hopefully we'll have it certainly finished enough to talk about within 6 months.
Okay. That's good. And how does my audience reach out to you? I see it on your screen, so we don't have to say any more. But if you want to reach out to Reverend Corby and really like talk to her about what she really does and how to cross the bridge or how to clean out that closet, you can reach out to her that way. And I know you're Googleable, right? You just Google you and you're there. So I know that
they can't avoid me. Not only is it the website, but it's Medium, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Patreon. Yeah. I'm all there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we thank you as being this international person that you are. And last words for my audience, you know, to empower them. Do you have any?
Oh, yeah. Always ask yourself three questions in any situation. What am I X about? An X could be afraid, angry, despondent, curious. Why am I X about that? And the question we never ask ourselves, what do I think would happen if I stopped being X about that? Allow yourself to change. Allow yourself to embrace new opportunities. You don't have to stay stuck where you are. Questions are magic.
Oh, that's good. Well, we thank you. This is the end part of our show. Guys, remember to look me up. You know, you can Google me, but I'm known as EJW Coaching. You can find me everywhere. And please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to leave Reverend Corby a message, click the bottom link under the podcast and you can leave her a message and I'll be sure that she gets it. Thank you so much for being here, because you could be anywhere else, but you're here with us today. Thanks so much. And this is Edna White, your host, and my guest today, Reverend Corby, saying goodbye for now.